And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
And a late start tonight, 11:10 here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. It's program 51. This is February 13th. Lisa Wolf, my co-host. What's up, Lisa? How are you?
Hey, Carl. How are you?
I'm doing great. And, oh, my gosh, I've been eating some unbelievable food. We have some incredible food from Chicago Raw in here. We're going to talk all about it. We're going to talk to co-owner Carol Jones in just a few minutes. It's unbelievable.
We're all
I cannot even
busting a gut here.
Believe this food that Carol brought in. But before we start everything out, I'm going to tell you that Michael Shane Detective tonight, also Mystery in the Air with Peter Lorre, and then a good Damon Runyon Theater Classic Radio Show. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. We're here Saturday and Sunday nights from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. playing your favorite classic radio shows. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actor stars in Snowden, an upcoming biographical political thriller directed by Oliver Stone about a CIA employee who leaks thousands of classified documents to the press.
All right, what's the prize?
The prize is a $25 gift certificate to Lumel Nadi's,
right,
which is the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza.
Okay, so if you know who this celebrity is, you will win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. Here is this actor in a scene from 1987's Moonstruck.
He made me look the wrong way, and I cut off my hand.
All right, if you know who that is,
the wrong way, you could lose your whole head.
Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back to our 51st show of the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
He made me look the wrong way, and I cut off my hand.
And we've got Joe on the line from Chicago. Hey, Joe.
Hello.
Hello. Can you tell me who that is?
I believe that's Nicolas Cage.
You are absolutely right. You are a winner, Joe. Do you know what you won?
I believe it's a certificate for Lou's, right?
Absolutely. You are right. A $25 gift certificate for Lou's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can check out their whole menu at loumelnadis.com. We hope you have a great pizza on us, okay?
Wonderful.
Thank you so much for listening, Joe.
Thanks, Joe. All right. Okay. This is the WGN Radio Theater. And before we tune into Michael Shane Detective, I want to introduce our guest in the studio, Carol Jones, co-owner of Chicago Raw. Carol, hi. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Good evening.
All right. Tell us a little bit about Chicago Raw, because our listeners may not know about your four locations throughout the Chicagoland area. And this is the most incredible, healthy food you can get in the city. Right?
Yes, it's very vibrant. It's very nutritious. It's got certain things going for it. It definitely has eye appeal. We have packaged our food and we market it to the mainstream. We don't want to marginalize anything that we offer. It's basically super good food, super good looking, and it's amazing health benefits.
And it's called Chicago Raw. Why? Because it's raw.
Because it's
food.
Raw, uncooked, but actually raw. We know when we started our company, my business partner, Polly Gazer, and myself, we wanted to come up with a name for, our restaurant and so forth, our business, and we came up with all kinds of fancy names, and you go out and look for good names, and we looked at each other, and we said, well, let's just call it what it is.
Right.
Raw.
Exactly.
Period.
It's like we call this show the WGN Radio
Raw,
Theater.
Period. And actually, it is an acronym, and it stands for Raising Awareness Worldwide.
All right.
We're hoping, Carol, that you can tell us your role within the company
yes.
and how every food is prepared with your own two hands and
oh,
with
yes.
your passion and
yes.
your heart.
Oh, beautiful. So basically, I'm an eternal foodie. I love food. I believe food travels through the stomach. And I just am a passionate person that loves to make food for other people.
Yes.
That's where all of this comes from. And then I ran into just one day into raw food, and I was so impressed with how I felt, and I just became a self-taught I don't want to use the word chef.
Right.
I'm a foodie that really likes to make amazing
we
food.
We like foodies.
And
we like you because you brought in some food for
mm-hmm.
us to have. And we've been, Mike Costella has been eating, Shane Reardon, Lisa and I, Kit, we've all been tasting this. Now, I have never had a raw pizza before, but I'm going to tell you something. I was a little skeptical to have a raw pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We are blown away by this pizza.
Yeah, maybe you could just give us a little insight into just what
no,
pizza
we're gonna come back
okay.
to we're gonna come back to Carol in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I gotta tell you, that pizza, and you can go online and look at it, because
I'm gonna post the pictures
picture.
As soon as we get to
All right, the pizza
first show
was
here.
Unbelievable. Now there's other things we're gonna eat, and we're gonna post
mm-hmm.
some pictures. We're gonna bring Carol back. We have to start our first radio show.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back now to 1948, Great Detective Adventure with Jeff Chandler. It's called The Case of the Popular Corpse. Here's part one of the new adventures of Michael Shane.
Her hat was on the ground by the edge of the river. There were a few bloodstains here and there, that was all. I had a hunch I'd seen the last of June Lawson. Then I heard a faint noise behind me. Somebody was cocking a revolver. And I knew without turning around, the gun was pointing at my spine, that any second it was going to go off.
The New Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. Michael Shane, reckless, red-headed Irishman, is back again in his old haunts in New Orleans. This is your director, Bill Russo, inviting you to listen to another transcribed episode, which we call The Case of the Popular Corpse.
$30 for office rent. Come in. 765 fall, 320 lights. There's a balance of... no balance.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. Here, have a seat.
Thank you. I hope I'm not disturbing you.
No, I was just balancing my books. It's a job for a tightrope walker. Oh, what's on your mind, Mrs.
Miss Clarissa Howard.
Miss Howard.
Mr. Shane... I want you to find my niece for me. June Lawson, I'm turning to you as a last resort.
Oh?
I haven't wanted anyone to know, so I've been making excuses to them all about June's whereabouts. You see, it's a rather painful matter for me to discuss.
What do you mean?
Well, the plain fact is, Mr. Shane, my niece ran away from home a month ago.
I see.
Oh, I suppose it was my fault, really. I should have made more of an attempt to understand her, but...
Uh-huh.
Well, there's quite a difference between 55 and 29. More than just the years.
Yeah.
And that's made being her guardian a little difficult sometimes.
You think June's here in New Orleans?
I'm positive of it. You see, Mr. Shane, June and I lived out in the country about 40 miles, near La Place. Oh, here's the address.
Uh-huh.
I still live there, but a month ago she... Well, she just left. Shortly afterward, I got a note from her. She wrote that if any mail came for her, to forward it care of general delivery here. Her note was written on Donner Hotel stationery.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and here's a snapshot of her.
Yeah. Very pretty girl, Miss Howard.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Oh, you don't have any idea where she'd be. Anything might help me find her.
Well, she was fond of music and nightclubs.
Oh, that's not much help.
Yes, I know, but it's all I can offer, I'm afraid. She kept pretty much to herself, sort of strange and quiet. Even her hobby is a strange one.
Oh, what is it?
She collects epitaphs.
Epitaphs? Is she kidding?
Oh, no, she has quite a collection.
Learn something new every day. Well, I can't guarantee anything, Miss Howard, but I will try to locate June Lawson.
Oh, please do, Mr. Shane. There's another thing. I'm not an alarmist, Mr. Shane, but I'm a little worried about June.
What do you mean?
Well, I might as well tell you that she has some enemies.
Oh?
Yes, one in particular. A man named...
Yeah?
But that doesn't matter. I'm sure if we could just get her to come back home, she'll be safe and everything will be all right, and I'll be a very happy woman.
Well, look, I'll do everything I can, Miss Howard, and I'll keep in touch with you. She thanked me and left. A plain-looking woman with a loneliness about her that made me feel sorry for her. I sat there a couple of minutes looking at the snapshot of June Lawson. Nice. Looking for someone like that couldn't be too unpleasant. About then, there was another knock on the door, and in came a very rugged-looking boy.
Shane?
Yeah?
My name is Keneally.
So?
So I have a job for you. I want you to find someone for me, a girl named June Lawson.
June Lawson?
Yeah, she's here in New Orleans.
Yeah?
I'll pay you $100 to find her.
Oh, you must be pretty anxious to see her.
I am.
Why, Keneally?
For $100, you ask an awful lot of questions.
Why do you want to find June Lawson?
Let's just say I have something for her.
That's what I thought. What is it, gold or lead?
What?
Skip it. Where are you staying, Mr. Keneally?
That doesn't matter, does it? I could keep in touch with you here at your office.
What's the matter? Don't you like visitors? Okay, Keneally, you keep in touch. Because I just might have something for you. A lot sooner than you think.
In a moment, we'll return to the new adventures of Michael Shane and the case of the popular corpse.
Well, in my business, you get used to surprises. I must admit that hearing the same story from two different people within an hour was a little startling. Both Clarissa Howard and a character named Keneally wanted me to find June Lawson for them. Only I had a hunch about why Keneally wanted to find her. I took the snapshot of June that Clarissa had given to me, went over to the Donna Hotel where Clarissa thought June might have stayed for a while. Clerk's face lit up like a pinball machine as soon as I showed him June's picture.
Yeah, she's really something, huh?
You remember her?
Remember? Sure, June Lawson. Could I forget something like that? Oh, look, excuse me. You her boyfriend or something?
No.
Oh, yeah, she was a real looker. Sort of strange, though.
How do you mean?
Always kept pretty much to herself. You know, didn't give a guy anything in the way of encouragement.
Yeah, I see. I mean,
of course, I was only trying to be companionable. Mm-hmm. Little girl all alone in the big city. You know, I figured she'd be sort of lonely.
Yeah.
But she couldn't see it that way. That's too bad. It's too bad.
When did she check out?
Day before yesterday. I think it was.
That recently, huh? I don't suppose she left a forwarding address.
No, I tried to get her to, you know, just a matter of record.
Sure.
No soap.
Okay, look, one more thing.
Yeah?
That bull-necked individual sitting over by the door reading a paper. You see him?
Yeah. What about him?
Do you guess here?
Don't place him. Why?
No reason. He came in a couple of minutes after I did. I was just wondering.
Afraid I can't help you there.
Okay, doesn't matter. Thanks. I walked through the lobby and out the front door, and on the way, I took a good look at Bull Nick. But he never looked up from his paper. I don't know, maybe it was my imagination. The next day, for lack of any other starting place, I went down to the post office and found a bench where I could watch the people going in and out. I'd remembered Clarissa telling me June was getting her mail care of general delivery. Well, I don't know if you've ever tried sitting on a bench all day. If not, don't. It's nothing but dull. And then finally, in the late afternoon, I spotted Bullneck sitting across the street. I guess I stared at him for a couple of minutes before I realized I was supposed to be watching the general delivery window. I twisted my head around, and there she was, just melting into the crowd. The girl in the snapshot, June Lawson. Hey, wait a minute, June!
Oh!
Beg your pardon, lady, I didn't see you.
Well, don't you look where you're going!
Look, I didn't mean to bump into you.
What are you trying to do,
I said I was sorry, lady. June, hey, wait a minute, June!
Hey.
Well, how do you like that? She's gone. Well, at least I'd seen June. I could tell Clarissa that her niece was alive and in New Orleans. So the next day, I drove out to Miss Howard's home in the country. It's a rambling old place that just sort of leaned tiredly against a grove of trees. Even the air around the house smelled musty, and I was beginning to see why June had left home. There was a dehydrated-looking gardener wandering around in front of the house, prodding the ground here and there. I went over to him. Pardon me, mister. I'm talking to you. Hey, is this where Clarissa Howard lives?
This is where.
Well, do you tell her I'm here, or do I knock, or what?
Ordinarily, you'd knock.
Okay, I'll be ordinary.
Won't do you any good.
Huh?
Ain't home.
Oh. And look, Chatterbox, would you mind telling me where she is?
Don't mind. Except I don't know.
Oh, fine.
Wait for the day. City, probably.
Well, okay. Oh, by the way, you knew her niece, June Lawson, didn't she?
Sure did.
She ever say anything to you about where she was going when she left?
Never did.
You're a big help.
I was away on a vacation when June left. I come back, she was gone. Me and Doris had left, too. Guess neither of them like it here. Saw a point with me, mister.
What is, June leaving or the maid?
Neither. My vacation, that's the saw point.
Why?
Oh, Miss Hyde, she says to me before I went, she'd get somebody to look after things while I'm gone. So she turns around and hires about the stupidest man she could find.
Huh?
I don't know who he was, and it's just as well.
Now, take it easy.
Why, the dumb bunny messed up all my work.
All right, easy.
All of it. Didn't do anything, Mike.
Yeah.
Couldn't even mow a lawn.
No.
Even cultivated around my prize camellias. Think of that.
What do you
mean? Now, any plain, ordinary fool knows better than to cultivate around camellias.
Of course.
Why, just thinking about it gets me
easy,
so...
Easy, Pop, easy.
Why, if I ever get my
hands... Look, Pop, so... unwind. I haven't the time. I'll see you later.
It makes me so doggone mad.
It makes me mad, Lisa. It makes me so doggone mad.
You know, everything
mad.
Makes you mad, Carl.
I know. Well, I'm not mad now because I'm eating great food from Chicago Raw. But we're listening to Michael Shane Detective, Case of the Popular Corpse. Jeff Chandler will get back to it after these words. Hey, Mike, Lisa can't talk because she keeps shoving Chicago Raw food into her mouth. She has not stopped eating.
No, I see this. And well, she's got the food and she's eating it.
Yeah.
And she's explaining how
right
the texture of it. And
look,
it's
sitting right next to me and I am enjoying this
Here's
food.
The thing. Lisa, and this is true, this is no funny business. Lisa is the pickiest eater I have ever known.
In
you
all
really,
seriousness,
really
I think
are.
I only eat like five or six foods,
the pickiest,
period.
She has eaten everything.
I learned today
that
she
Carol
eats
Jones
the same
brought
lunch every day.
Yeah.
I eat the same
well,
thing
now
for
you
lunch
can go
every single day.
To one of Chicago Raw's four locations, right, Carol?
Yes.
Tell us the locations.
Sure. We have our first and original location, literally a few blocks down from your station here in the French Market.
Okay.
And the address is 131 North Clinton. It's right on the street level, downstairs of the Ogilvy Metra transport hub that all the trains go out into the suburbs.
Great.
The second location that we have is 51 West Huron Street. It's right here on between Dearborn and State, across the street from the Whole Foods here on the Gold Coast.
Gotcha.
The hours are here from 7 a.m. at 51 West Huron to 9 p.m. And then we have also a quite large representation of our items in Whole Foods in Streeterville here on East Grant, and look forward to also having our products in the Kingsbury North Avenue Whole Foods. They really want to have our product there for
well, that's
as
a,
many...
a recommendation right there if Whole Foods wants it.
Yes.
And where's the fourth location?
That is our commissary, commercial food production, which is also retail, and that is 325 North Hoyne over by the United Center.
Okay, so now here's the deal. Mm-hmm. You can go into any one of the four Chicago Raw locations, and you just pick up and you take it out in this beautiful plastic tray. It's the whole meal there for a lunch or a dinner. You just have lunch and dinner, correct?
Well, we have over 100 different menu items.
Oh my gosh.
That stretches the whole spectrum from a green juice to a decadent ice cream.
So the juices are for breakfast, but you can have them throughout the day.
You can have
All three meals you can have at Chicago Raw.
Yes.
And I tell you what, would you have a website? Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just posted a picture of some of the foods and your website and you. So for more information, you can go to chicagorawfood.com. And it's on our WGN Radio Theater Facebook page. So you can see some of the pictures and you can check out the website and some of the items that we have showcased
now,
here.
Now, what is that? What is the second thing I had? It was like a kale something or other?
It's a kelp noodle dish, and it's our
It's noodle. I'm Italian. Noodles.
But it's made from kelp, so it's a seaweed, and they make it from the outer gelatinous layer of the kelp plant. It's a seagrass. It's a vegetable grown in, and it's got all the minerals, more than 90 different minerals that your body needs, because it's the seawater and the plant really gives it to you in an organic form.
Right, so this is like a whole new way to eat, because it's all healthy, it's all great for you, and you want to go to Chicago Raw. Four locations.
Chicago
go to
Raw
their
food.
Yes, chicagorawfood.com. Well, and we also have a takeaway program where customers can buy a week-long's worth of food, and then you can just purchase it. You get a 10% discount.
Very good.
The incentive is for you to have it in your fridge. The food lasts for 5 days, to just have it available for you. And I also teach
It wouldn't last
workshops.
5 days in my refrigerator, because I'd eat it, and so would my son.
Oh.
We'd be eating it all the time.
Well, I'm still eating it as
Lisa,
we go.
Well, Carol, it's great to meet you. I wish we had more time to talk. Carol Jones, co-owner, Chicago Raw. Go to chicagorawfood.com. Mm-hmm. Four locations. Mm-hmm. Please check them out. You're going to love it. The pizza is unbelievable.
And if you have any questions, you know what, send them over our way through the Facebook page.
All right. Thanks, Carol. Great
Thank
having
you
on the
having
show.
Me.
Very welcome.
Thank you.
Great to meet you. All right, let's get back to this now. 1948, it's called The Case of the Popular Corpse. Jeff Chandler as Michael Shane, detective.
I left the old fella hopping around, doing a little shadow boxing and turning the air blue. I went back to town, tried to figure out my next move. I was getting nowhere fast. One thing, sure, I had no ambition to camp at the general delivery window again. Then I remembered Clarissa told me June liked nightclubs and music. Well, that was about as slim a lead as you can have, but it was better than nothing. So I started making the rounds of the night spots that had bands. Philippe's was first on the list. I put the snapshot down on the bar in front of the bartender.
What'll it be, mister?
This.
Hey, that's nice. But not on the menu.
I know. Ever seen it before?
I'm afraid I haven't had the pleasure.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, what is it?
When you find her, bring her in, will you? I'd like to meet her.
I kept going. I covered 15 spots by midnight. I was about ready to give up. Nobody recognized June's picture, but they all wanted to see the original. Then I tried spot number 16. My luck started to pick up.
Yeah, let's have another look. Yeah.
She's been in here before?
Yeah, she comes in here every now and then.
Oh, thanks. Look, have one on me, will you? I'm going to stick around a while, just in case.
Make yourself at home, mister. Yeah, thanks for the drink.
I waited about an hour, I guess. Then all of a sudden, she was standing in the doorway, June Lawson. Only she didn't come in, just took a look around, turned, and went out again. I was on my feet in a hurry. When I got out on the sidewalk, she was just turning the corner. I started after her. Then I spotted Bullneck. He came at me fast, and he had a present for me, a roll of pennies. Only his fist was closed around it, and before I could duck, he gave me the present right back on my left ear. Oh. Started when a middle-aged lady named Clarissa Howard hired me to find her niece, June Lawson, who'd run away from their home in the country a month ago. Shortly after she left my office, a rugged-looking gent named Keneally walked in. He also wanted me to find June, and I was betting his reasons weren't nearly as pleasant as Clarissa's. Anyway, I started looking for June. It wasn't long before I realized I was being tailed by a character with a size 18 collar. I got a glimpse of June at the post office, lost her, and later that night saw her again at the door of a bar. When I got outside and started after her, my bull-necked shadow caught up with me, clipped me on the side of the head with a fistful of pennies, and I took a short nap. When I came out of it, the bartender was bending over me.
My, my. Look at all the pennies.
Yeah. They're not from heaven, brother, believe me.
Some lump you got there.
Yeah, thanks. I'll sell it to you cheap. I suppose you know what became of the boy who gave it to me.
Sure.
Huh?
I heard the noise and got out here in time to see him going into that all-night drugstore. See it? Across the street from Donaway's?
Yeah.
Acted like he sort of wanted to keep an eye on you. He hasn't come out of there yet.
Good, he's going to have company. Thanks. I crossed the street and started for the drugstore. When I got to the door, I saw Bull Neck inside. He seemed pretty startled to see me. He backed toward the rear of the store, but he picked the wrong place. There was no way out.
Get away from me, Shane.
Uh-uh. We're going to have a little talk, Bull Neck.
I got nothing to say.
We're going to change that. Who hired you to tell me?
Go on, beat it.
Let's have it. Who hired you? Come on.
Shane, if you know what's good for you...
Look, I know what's not good for me. Getting hit by you a couple of minutes ago is one of the things. Now open up before I get the answer out of you the hard way.
I said beat it. I'm not telling you nothing.
Okay, Buster, you're begging for it. Here it is without the pennies. You... All right, come on, champ. That was just the first round.
Lay off, Shane. Lay off.
You feel more like talking now?
Yeah.
And who hired you to tell me? Come on, talk!
Keneally.
Keneally? What's his angle?
I don't know.
Come on, Bull Neck, open up or we'll go round and round again.
I'm giving it to you straight. I tell you, I don't know. Keneally hired me, that's all I know. Keneally hired me.
Okay. I think maybe you better retire from active service, though. As of right now. Well, I was no nearer finding June than before. But squaring with Bull Neck for the lump on my head made me feel a little better about things. I went back to my office, and I was pretty sure I'd seen the last of Bull Neck and the boy who hired him, Keneally. But that just shows how wrong you can be. When I opened my office door, there was Keneally sitting behind my desk.
Hello, Shane. You found June Lawson yet?
What are you doing here, Keneally?
Asking if you found June Lawson yet.
Look, you know if I found her yet or not. That bullneck baboon of yours has been keeping you posted.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, of course not. Now listen, Keneally, I know why you want to find June. I'm not going to be a party to it. You'll never find her through me. I've told Bullneck to lay off, and I'm telling you. Now get out.
All right, Shane. All right. But you haven't seen the last of me. That's a promise from me to you.
But at the moment, I was more interested in bed than I was in Keneally's promises. So I went to my room and turned in. The next morning, I decided I'd better try again to see Clarissa so I could report to her. But she saved me the trouble. She was waiting for me at my office.
Good morning, Mr. Shane. I understand you came out to the house yesterday.
Yes.
I'm sorry I missed you. Have you found out anything yet?
Well, I can't tell you where June is yet.
Oh, I see.
She's alive.
She is, you're sure?
I got a couple of glimpses of her.
Oh, Mr. Shane, that's wonderful. You don't know how happy I am to hear that. What a relief it is.
You said June had an enemy. You started to name him and then you stopped.
Well, I thought it best not to say any more about it.
I think we'd better. Is his name Keneally?
Keneally?
Is it?
Yes, Mr. Shane.
I think you better tell me why he's looking for her, Miss Howard.
Yes, I suppose I had. You see, Mr. Shane, I've acted in a sense as June's guardian for some time. The periodic sums of money in her inheritance have always been paid to me. I regulated her finances. But for the last year, I received no money from the estate at all up north. June told me the inheritance had all been paid.
You found out differently?
Yes. June finally confessed that she'd been intercepting the money to pay Keneally.
Blackmail?
Yes. She wouldn't tell me why.
Well, cheer up, Miss Howard. We're not licked yet. I must admit I'm fresh out of leads. Is there anything you forgot to tell me about her that might help?
No. No, I can't think of anything.
Wait a minute. You did tell me something that might help. You said June's hobby was collecting epitaphs.
Well, that's right.
That's the one thing I haven't tried, the cemeteries.
Oh, but there are so many of them.
I know, but it's worth a try, and I better get started. I'll keep you posted, Miss Howard. Who knows? Maybe we'll hit the jackpot with our last nickel. She left after that, and I made a list of the cemeteries that were noted for interesting epitaphs. And then I started off. I went from one to another with no luck. It was just a little before dark when I got to St. Louis Cemetery number 1. Way across the place, a couple of hundred yards away, I saw a girl walking among the crypts. I started toward her, and I was still more than 100 yards away from her when she turned her head and saw me. It was June. She didn't waste any time. She headed in the direction of the river, and fast. Hey! Hey, June! Hey, wait a minute, June! Well, for crying out loud, she's gone. Here we go again. I kept going toward the river, because I knew she'd have to be around there somewhere. It was getting pretty dark now. Finally, I got to the bushes near the bank and parted them. And I stopped. Her hat was on the ground by the river's edge, and there were a few bloodstains here and there, and that was all. I had a hunch I'd seen the last of June Lawson. Then I heard a faint noise behind me. Somebody was cocking a revolver. I knew without turning around that the gun was pointing at my spine, that any second it was going to go off. June Lawson's hat in front of me on the riverbank and a gun behind me due to go off any second. I didn't even know who was holding the gun, but I didn't have to wait long to find out.
Went a little too far, didn't you, Shane?
Well, Keneally, can't say I'm very surprised.
You're gonna come with me, Shane, right now, and no tricks, or you'll get one right in the back.
The way June Lawson did?
Yeah, if you want to put it that way.
You know, ordinarily, there's nothing I'd like better than to accept your invitation. Right now, I haven't the time.
Shane!
I was lucky. The light was bad. The slug plowed into the dirt, an inch from my neck. I kept on the bushes and kept moving fast. A couple of times, I could see Keneally walking along, outlined against the sky. And finally, I shook him. I went back into town. All of a sudden, I realized I was near the bar where I'd gotten a glimpse of June the night before, so I dropped in. I sat there for quite a while. I was almost ready to leave and drive out to break the news to Clarissa when I happened to look up. I blinked and looked again. No, I wasn't imagining things. Sitting there at the bar, down near the far end, was June Lawson. Well, this time I didn't lose out. I got to the side door a step before she did.
Oh, no.
I'm leaving.
Oh, good. We'll leave together. Come on outside. Here. Okay, this alley ought to do nicely. Now, come on, let's have it. What's this all about?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. Come on, give, June. Why this hard-to-catch routine you've been giving me the last couple of days? Also, why the fake murder set up on the riverbank?
Look, I'm getting out of this deal. I'm washing my hands of it. I haven't done anything, and you can't prove I have. And I'm sick of all this.
What are you talking about?
Look, mister, I'm not the girl you want.
Oh, now, don't give me that. I've got a picture of you. I've seen you twice in the last couple of days.
Oh, I'm the girl you've been chasing, all right, but I'm not June Lawson.
What?
No. My name is Doris. I was the maid out there at June's and Miss Howard's place.
Yeah, but what...
Well, I'll tell you all I know, and that isn't much. I was hired to stay in town to let you see me, but not catch up to me. I wasn't expecting you to come back here tonight. I was supposed to make it look like I'd been murdered down there at the river. My boyfriend was hired, too, to follow you and report your progress.
Your boyfriend? You mean Bull Neck? I still don't see
what... If anyone asked us, we were supposed to say Keneally hired us.
But Keneally really didn't hire either of you, huh?
No. Believe me, mister, I'm telling the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you are, Doris. And the reason I thought she was because I started remembering things all of a sudden. Things the withered little gardener had told me. That June must have left while he was away. And that somebody had been cultivating around his prized camellias. Yeah, about then it all began to make sense. I drove out to Clarissa's place. It was dark and quiet. I fumbled around until I found a shovel leaning against the lath house. Then I went over to the camellia bushes. I started to dig. Ground was soft and it wasn't from rain. I had a pretty strong hunch what I'd find. 2 feet down and I stopped. Wasn't a pretty sight. Only I didn't have much time to brood about it.
Good evening, Mr. Shane.
Clarissa.
Yes. Kindly do not move. I have a gun. So,
You've discovered my dear departed niece's resting place. Very clever of you.
You killed the real June Lawson a month ago.
It will be a month tomorrow. Very convenient of you to have dug your own grave, Mr. Shane.
Grave?
Yes. You will rest in peace beside June there.
Oh, wait a minute.
Put down that shovel. Put it down.
Come on now. Let's have the gun. Let's have it. That's better.
Drop the gun, Shane.
Keneally.
Yeah, Keneally.
Oh, look.
You won't get away this time, Shane. No, you, Clarissa.
I don't know what you're talking about, Mr. Keneally.
Look, if you'll let me get a word in...
You haven't time for many more words, Shane. You killed my cousin. That's why you're going to die, too.
Your cousin?
Yeah, June Lawson.
June, but...
A little while ago, down on the riverbank. I missed you then. I won't miss you now.
Look, you got it all wrong. Clarissa hired me...
Yes, I know Clarissa hired you to kill June. I know all about Clarissa.
I tell you, I don't know what you...
You've been stealing the money from June for 2 years, Clarissa, from the estate. I became suspicious. Came here to investigate.
So that's your motive, Clarissa. June found out you were taking her dough, confronted you, and you answered all her questions permanently.
Don't try to get out of it, Shane. Clarissa hired you to kill June.
Now look, this is straight. I had nothing to do with it. Clarissa killed June. You came to New Orleans to investigate, and when she found out you were coming to see me, she got to me first to discredit you. She hired the maid to pose as June.
No good,
Shane. Oh, can't you get it through your head that Clarissa killed June a month ago?
What are you talking about?
Look, this hole in the ground behind me. Look.
He looked for quite a while. And Clarissa started to edge away, but not soon enough. Keneally turned on her and his face was white, but his gun didn't waver. It was pointed right at her head. There was only one thing I could do, dive at him. It was a dead heat. Just as I hit him, the gun went off. A slug hit the tree beside Clarissa, and by that time I had the gun turned toward the ground. I kept twisting, and suddenly his hand went limp. I had the gun. He just sort of sagged in. Shock, I guess. I knew then that I could persuade him to let the law take its course with Clarissa. Well, that's just about that. Except the way I look at it, I'm still in danger. Just as much as ever. No, not from Bullneck. I haven't seen him since. Not Keneally. He's pretty grateful I stopped him from killing Clarissa. No, it's that gardener of Clarissa's I'm worried about. He's still looking for me on account of what I did to those prized camellias of his that night.
This is your director, Bill Russo, again. Our story is based on characters created by Brett Halliday and was written by Bob Reif. The music is composed and conducted by John Duffy, and Michael Shane is portrayed by Jeff Chandler. The New Adventures of Michael Shane is a Don W. Sharp production, transcribed in Hollywood and distributed exclusively by the Broadcasters Guild.
That's the New Adventures of Michael Shane from 1948 with A Case of the Popular Corpse starring Jeff Chandler. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Stick around. Welcome back. Hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. Happy Valentine's Day. Lisa, will you be my Valentine?
Well, I have a lot of offers. I'll
really?
Have to think about it.
I'll take a number.
Okay, that's fine. I think you're number 252.
Lisa has quite the fan base. It would be tough to be her Valentine, I'm sure. Plus, you've been married, what, 20 years? Yeah. I guess I'll just, in our next life, you could be my Valentine.
Yeah,
okay?
Well, you just keep waiting in line.
Okay, very good. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We play classic radio shows for you every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. This hour, we are going to tune into a terrific mystery starring Peter Lorre in the marvelous Barastro on Mystery in the Air, the very first episode in the series. And then in our next hour, leading us up till 2 a.m., we'll tune into the Damon Runyon Theater with John Brown as Broadway. That's coming your way this morning because it is now Sunday morning. And it's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride. Dum, da-dum,
da-dum, da-dum, da-dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising is an upcoming comedy, the sequel to the 2014 film Neighbors, and stars this actor who helps battle the sorority sisters who move into his neighboring house.
Okay, if you can name the celebrity that Lisa's talking about, you're going to win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza. The number to call, 312-981-7200. And here is a hint. You'll hear him now in a scene from 2007's Knocked Up.
I'm Canadian.
Oh, that's cool.
From Vancouver. I live here illegally, actually. Won't tell anyone. But it works out in my advantage, I think, ultimately, because I don't have to pay any taxes.
That could be good, Lisa. All right, give us a call if you know who that actor is. 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
This is Hour 2 of the WGN Radio Theater. Play my favorite game, Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
I'm Canadian.
Oh, that's cool.
From Vancouver. I live here illegally, actually. Won't tell anyone. But it works out in my advantage, I think, ultimately, because I don't have to pay any taxes.
Let's talk to Rosa from Chicago. Hey, Rosa.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Thank you.
Who's that great actor we just heard from Knocked Up?
Seth Rogen.
It is Seth Rogen. He's one of my favorites. He's fantastic, isn't he, Rosa?
He sure is.
Okay, well, you are a winner tonight. You have won a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, which I have to agree with. I love it there. And you can visit one of the 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. Rosa, thanks so much for listening and for calling in.
Oh, thank you, guys. Have a good night.
Thanks you
Rosa.
Too.
You too. Thanks for listening. All right, it's time for a mystery. I love the mysteries,
I
and
love
I love the detectives. Of course, I love the comedies, too, and I like the sci-fi, and I like the drama, and I like the westerns. But I think I like the mysteries the most, because you're a mystery, Lisa.
Women are a mystery
you
to you.
You are a mystery,
you.
Yes. Women are. They always have been a mystery to
I
me.
Know,
you're right.
I know.
So this starred movie star Peter Lorre. He was a creepy guy, you know. And this was a summer replacement for the Abbott and Costello show in 1947, and it featured stories of the strange and unusual culled from the four corners of world literature. And it presented stories by Edgar Allan Poe, Pushkin, Theodore Sturgeon, and Dostoevsky. And they had L.A.'s best supporting actors on this. Harry Morgan was the narrator. He later was TV's Detective Joe Gannon on Dragnet. Lorre was the lead in each story and gave intense, supercharged performances. I think you're going to like this, Lisa. The first episode in the Mystery in the Air series is called The Marvelous Barastro. It stars Peter Lorre, and it's from August 7th, 1947, part one now of Mystery in the Air.
Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre.
Yes?
You're Mr. Amos G. Hall, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Who are you?
I'm Barastro, the hypnotist and magician. He called me the Marvelous Barastro.
What do you want? How did you get in my office?
I said I was a magician. I do such things.
Well, why have you come to see me?
Why? Because you're a great lawyer, and I'll have need of your services soon.
Indeed?
Yes, indeed. Because tonight I shall commit a murder.
Each week at this hour, Peter Lorre brings us the excitement of the great stories of the strange and unusual, of dark and compelling masterpieces culled from the four corners of world literature. Tonight, The Marvelous Barastro by Ben Hecht. Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre. Famous criminal lawyer Amos G. Hall sits staring into the hypnotic eyes of the Marvelous Barastro, who has just announced that tonight he will commit murder.
Yes, Mr. Hall, for a long time, I have dreamed only one dream, to kill this man.
Why? Who is he?
Rico Sansoni. Have you heard of him?
No, can't say that I have.
Well, he's a great magician, a great hypnotist, yes. He's clever, he's too clever. I've hunted him from country to country, from city to city, all over the world. Sometimes I've almost caught him. In London, I only missed him by only 2 hours, but tonight I shall meet him face to face.
You know where he is then? Right now?
Yes. Rico Sansone is here, in this city, now. Tonight, he opens in his first stage performance, and I'll be there, waiting for him.
Hmm. Well, apart from the legalistic aspects of the case, why do you want to murder this man?
Why? Listen closely, Mr. Hall, and perhaps you'll know a part of my hate for this fiend. Oh, it began some time ago. I was traveling with a small carnival through Eastern Europe. I cast horoscopes, I read the future, I revealed the past, and conversed with the spirits. That is how I earned a meager living. Well, one night our carnival came to a village, somewhere in Malorussia. Peasants and the villagers gathered around our tents and wagons, and through a hole in a black box where I stood, I watched a crowd while a barker made his speed.
Barastro, the magician who speaks with the dead, tells the future, reads the secrets of life. Barastro, who reveals
and then,
the past.
Then I saw her. She had a young and gentle face. She was beautiful. Oh, so beautiful. I couldn't take my eyes away. And then to my indescribable joy, a peasant led her in, and I saw at once the girl was blind.
This is my granddaughter, Anna. She would like you to tell her fortune.
Can you tell my future?
Yes, Anna, I can.
Will it be a happy one, my future?
Well, show me your hand, and I'll tell you.
Here.
I took her hand. And suddenly, I felt a chill. I could hear the voices. I could hear them, and fear, a great fear, gripped me, but the girl's beautiful, sightless eyes, they were so full of hope and faith, I just couldn't tell her the truth. Spirits promise you great happiness, Anna.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, your hands will touch beautiful things, and love and great happiness await you.
Oh, thank you, sir. Oh, thank you, thank you.
That was the beginning. Her face never left me that night, and I couldn't sleep. The next morning, I looked for her, and I found her. We walked through the hills, and she spoke of the trees she could not see.
I call that tree lullaby, because it sings when it sways in the wind.
Yes.
And this other I call prayer. They told me its branches open toward heaven.
I was with her that whole day, and the next, and the next, and we walked often in the hills and the forest, and she knew every turn in a path. We were in love, and when it came time for the carnival to move on, I asked Anna to come with me as my wife.
You make me very happy, Gregor. I could live only with you. I love you with all my heart.
And I love you with all my heart, Anna. And I'll care for you and I'll protect you.
And you'll teach me, Gregor. You'll teach me to see.
To see?
One doesn't need eyes to see as you do.
No, one does not.
Oh, please, Gregor. Teach me to see beyond the horizon. Please teach me to see as you see.
Yes, Anna. My sweet little Anna. And the day we were married, we rode together in a gilded wagon, and our vows were taken under a clear sky. But immediately after, the sky suddenly changed. I realized what I had done. It was I. It was I who was carrying out the terrible message of the stars. For it was I that fate had selected to destroy her. From that moment on, I was haunted. One evening, it was less than a month later, I stood in a black box outside my tent, and I knew it had come. That graceful, smiling man who stood before the tent, he was studying Anna. Not once did he take his eyes from her. Hey, you. You, why do you stare at her?
Let go of my eye.
I don't want you to stare at her.
Who are you?
That makes no difference. She's my wife.
Oh, I most humbly beg your pardon, sir. You see, I was admiring your wife.
Yes?
Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Rico Sansoni, the hypnotist and magician. I'm going on a world tour soon, and I'd hoped she could join me as my assistant. I feel she has remarkable psychic powers.
She is blind.
I apologize doubly for my seeming forwardness.
Oh, I knew he sensed the ominous shadows around her as I did, but then he smiled and I was disarmed and soon I became interested in his talk. He talked like a friend. He flattered me about my knowledge of the secrets of our profession.
I noticed you performed a disappearing cage trick, Barastro.
Yes, I do.
A most difficult one that you perform magnificently.
Thank you. Well, come, Sansoni, I'd like you to meet my wife. She's here in the wagon.
Delighted, my dear Barastro. It's a privilege I'll not forget, let me assure you.
Oh, Gregor.
Hello, Anna.
Gregor, who is that with you?
Oh, it's a gentleman I want you to meet. Anna, this is Rico Sansoni.
A great pleasure and a great sorrow. You see, I've been watching you tonight in the hope I could persuade you to become my assistant. But now I learn you're this charming gentleman's wife. Mm-hmm. How fortunate is the marvelous Barastro.
Marvelous Barastro? Anna, did you hear what he called me? Anna, what's the matter? Have you no word of greeting for our guest?
No.
What's the matter, Anna?
I have nothing to say.
I'm sorry. You see, my wife and I, we seldom had visitors.
I understand perfectly. But I hope that she will like me when she gets to know me better.
All right, that's the first portion of The Marvelous Barastro on Mystery in the Air from 1947, starring Peter Lorre and Lisa Wolfe. You remember Peter Lorre in The Maltese Falcon? You remember that movie with Humphrey Bogart? He was in that movie.
I saw it.
I think
it
was
back,
Joel
yeah.
Cairo in that movie. Sydney Greenstreet, Humphrey Bogart in The Maltese Falcon. All right, let's get back to that in just a few minutes. But first, let's pay some bills here on the WGN Radio Theater. Oh, this is where I always ask you if you want to dance, Lisa. And it is Valentine's Day, and you're in red because we were at the Hawks game.
We were. We had a great time. And
yeah,
the
they didn't win, though.
Sweet, but it was all about the company.
I tell you what, I could learn to live like that, going to the Hawks suite.
Well, you know, just
WGN
maybe we'll be invited again.
I hope so. And good food. There was had a taffy apple. Oh my!
Oh.
I just ate, and I've just been eating and eating and eating, and it's showing. Let me tell you, it is showing. I'm gonna have to buy some new clothes pretty soon. And And not smaller size. Larger size.
Do they come larger?
New belts. I'm going to have to
get
a belt.
Do they get larger?
Yeah.
I can attest to that. Yes, they do come larger.
Yeah.
I've blazed the trail for you already.
The voice from above. Yes. Hi, Roger.
I always look up at the little screen like I'll be able to, like you'll pop out or something.
Yeah.
They need a bigger TV down there. Seriously. Yeah. I've sat down there. I can't see anything.
Our eyes are getting old, Roger. We need to see you in like, you know, mega size.
Well, no, that's one thing you don't need to see me.
Before we get back to Mystery in the Air, I would like to tell our listeners about our drawing for a full year of Cat's Pride Kitty Litter, right, Mike?
Absolutely. So you want to take a picture of you and your cat, send it into catspridephoto@gmail.com, and provide your name, your cat's name, city, and state.
All right. And what happens? You get put into a drawing.
You get put into a drawing.
And Dan Chaffee, the CEO of Cat's Pride, comes in here, and what happens, Lisa?
Carl loves to, like, narrate.
I'm just bridging between the two. You know what happens,
narrating.
Lisa?
You win an entire year's supply of the finest kitty litter around, Cat's
Pride. If
he
draws your name.
You said, what happens if you win?
Oh, did I?
And I'm saying, you win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter.
Very good. Well, Shane is, he's yelling at me. Look, he's waving his hands
in
there.
I like to yell at you,
too. He says, get back to Mystery in the Air. All right, that's what we're going to do right now. Let's go back to August 7th, 1947 for the conclusion.
Paint me up to be the bad guy.
Yes. Someone's
like
got to be the bad guy.
You love it.
For the marvelous Barastro starring Peter Lorre, here's the conclusion to Mystery in the Air.
And so, Rico Sansoni entered our lives. In a days which followed, he attached himself ever more closely to us, as a lonely man would who seeks the friendship of those he likes. But Anna, she would never trust him. Sometimes after he would leave at night, she'd whisper,
I don't like him, Gregor. I don't like...
Why?
I feel something strange from him.
And I like a fool, I would always defend him. I'd remind her of his gay talk and how he made us laugh and how interested he was in me and my methods of magic. Oh, I was flattered that even Rico wanted to learn from me. One night, Anna and I had just finished our dinner. She turned to me. She had a troubled expression on her beautiful face.
Gregor, there's something I must tell you.
What, my sweet? Are you getting tired of this kind of life, huh?
Oh, no, no, Gregor. It's this afternoon.
What about this afternoon? What about it, Anna?
Rico.
What about Rico?
This afternoon, Rico came here and talked to me as he always does.
Yes?
I suspected nothing. But then he took my hand in his and asked me if I loved you.
He asked you what?
If I loved you even more than happiness or life.
What did you say?
I was so frightened. I just asked him to leave. I don't like him, Gregor. I'm afraid.
But again, I reassured Anna. After all, what had happened? Nothing. Well, our friendship continued. Weeks passed, the carnival had moved to Hamburg, and we had taken an apartment in the city. We spent the days together, and he was more and more interested in my every word and thought and mood, and as always, I was flattered by him.
You have a funny way of saying beautiful, my friend.
Hmm?
How is it again?
Beautiful.
Yes, that's it. Beautiful.
Look, Rico, you were telling me about that.
Beautiful. Oh, I like you, Gregor. I like you very much.
Yes, amazing, isn't it? How one can be taken in by flattery. Yet so clever was he, I never realized the terrible truth of his friendship with me. I was in my tent one afternoon when a warning swept over me. It was all of a sudden, but I couldn't mistake it. I left the tent and I hurried to the apartment. And carefully, I opened the door. Yes, there was Rico.
standing with his arms around my wife, her face raised to his lips. She kissed him. And then I heard him talk. It was my voice he was using. My voice, completely mine.
Anna.
At the sound of his voice, a nameless fury seized me. Now I knew why he'd been so interested in me, why he'd spent so many hours with me. He'd learned to perfection how to use my voice. Now his words seemed to come from my own throat. I sprang forward, shouting, "Rico! Rico! Anna! Anna! Don't touch him! Don't touch him!"
Amos G. Hall, the attorney, sits at his desk fascinated by the magician Barastro as he tells his strange story. Now the attorney leans forward.
That is incredible.
Yes.
You mean this Sansoni had studied your speech and mannerisms so perfectly that he was able to deceive your
wife? Yes, incredible as it may seem.
Well, go on.
Right. I hardly remember rushing across the room. All I could think of was to kill this man, to kill him.
Anna screamed, and he and I, we struggled across the room, over chairs and tables, against the walls and the window. I saw him through my rage. Every feature had changed. He was Barastro. There were two of us. Yes, two. Barastro screaming, instead of fighting. Then he had me by the throat. His strength was terrifying. The breath began to leave my body as this horrible fiend changed and he became Rico Sansoni again.
Barastro, have mercy, man. Gregor, you're killing me. I am dying.
Yes, he was pretending it was I who was killing him. He would kill me and live with Anna as Barastro. His cruel eyes burned into mine, and he leaned close to my ear and whispered,
"You fool, I'll kill you for her."
It was then that I cried with all my might, "Anna! Anna!" And then suddenly a great darkness flooded over me.
I don't know how much time had gone by when I opened my eyes. I looked around the room. It was gone. Then I saw Anna. She was crouched against the wall. I tried to whisper, "Anna. Anna." I began to drag myself across the floor to her. When I got to her side, I tried to reach for her hand. She pulled it away and screamed. Then I realized her terror. Who was in the room with her? Was it Rico? Was it her husband? How could she know? I pleaded with her. I assured her again and again that Rico had gone, but she remained against the wall, her hand held in her teeth and staring into the terrible dark around her. Frantically, I searched my mind for words to tell her it was really I. Look, Anna, listen. Remember, Anna? Remember our walk through the hills? First time? Huh? See, remember, Anna, your trees? Remember them? The one you called lullaby? And the one whose branches pointed to the sky? You called it prayer. See? See, Anna? It is I. Listen carefully. Look, remember I read your future? the first time we met. I said, the spirits promise you happiness and your hands will touch beautiful things. Love and great happiness await you. And you said, oh, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Gregor. Gregor, hold me.
Yes.
Gregor, please hold me. Don't hold me.
Yes, Anna. Yes.
Rico had disappeared, but from that day on, I had only one thought, to guard against the day I knew must come. We traveled all over Europe, and she learned to smile and be happy again, and at times I felt her fears had left her.
Vienna's such a lovely city, Gregor. I knew it'd be like this in the spring. Gregor, these mountains. They're like the ones near my village. Mm-hmm. Why, I can almost see them. Oh, it's wonderful to be home, Gregor.
Yes, ma'am.
To walk in our hills and over the old paths again.
Well, at last, I felt it was safe to get a job in a cabaret. I had to get a job. Our savings were almost gone, and I had only worked there 2 weeks when I felt that same terrible warning sweep over me again. Choked and dizzy, I ran to our cottage. Yes. Yes, Rico was back. I stood there. Motionless, silent, listening. I heard her laugh like a child. All I knew, I had to kill this devil who would take my wife, my identity, my happiness. I am sure if I had been able to think, I would have realized that I shouldn't rush into the room because it would kill her. I'm quite sure Rico knew it, but all I could think was I had to kill him. And then, Mr. Hall, I had a terrifying idea. What if Rico killed me? He'd go on living with her as Barastro, and she'd never know. See, Mr. Hall? Well, I opened the door and walked in. Anna, don't touch him. It's Rico. Anna! Well, this, sir, is my memory of Anna. She tore at her eyes with her hands, as if to tear away the darkness. As I rushed to her, she fell. She didn't speak again, and the next morning she died. Huh? Sansoni. Think you understand now, Mr. Hall, why I'll kill Rico Sansoni tonight. Now you know why a maid needs your services to defend me. No, not my life, but my name and my honor. Good night, Mr. Hall.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've practiced criminal law for 25 years, and I've heard many strange tales. But that night, I couldn't sleep. The next morning, there was an item in the paper. A train had hit a car in which two magicians were riding. One was killed, his body so badly cut up as to be unidentifiable. The other was in the hospital. I hurried over there, made inquiries, and went to the room. I quickly told the nurse my business, and she led me to the bed. Two burning eyes, all that was left of a face. stared out through a mass of bandages as the nurse leaned over close to him.
Your attorney, Mr. Hall, is here.
Yes.
Well, I guess you'll not have any need of my services after all. The police haven't placed a charge against you, have they?
Police? Why should they? It was an accident. Just a bad accident.
Well, it must have been perfectly done. You know, the only thing I don't understand, how could you have killed him in the accident and not be killed yourself?
Well, I'm the marvelous Barastro, am I not? Or don't you believe me?
Next week, Mystery in the Air, starring Mr. Peter Lorre, brings you The Lodger by Mrs. Belloc Lowndes with a special musical score composed and conducted by Paul Barron.
Be sure to listen in on Prince Albert's Grand Ole Opry Saturday night. You'll hear Red Foley and his Cumberland Valley Boys, Minnie Pearl, Rod Brasfield, and all of the Opry gang. And as Red's special guest, you'll hear Texas Jim Robertson. Remember, Prince Albert's Grand Ole Opry, Saturday night, over NBC.
Listen again next week at this same time. The artists supporting Mr. Lorre were Henry Morgan, John Brown, Barbara Eiler, Howard Culver, Jane Morgan, and Russell Thorson. This is Michael Roy in Hollywood wishing you all a pleasant good night.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
And that's Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre in The Marvelous Barastro, as heard on NBC, August 7th, 1947. The first show in the series, Lisa, was originally sponsored by Camel Cigarettes, but we removed the Camel cigarette commercials because we don't want you to smoke, right?
Yes.
I'll be talking like this if I smoked.
Or get any kind of
we don't
emphysema
want
or lung
no,
cancer
not
or
good.
Anything else.
So don't smoke. Not good for you. John Brown in that cast, and he's going to appear as Broadway in the Damon Runyon Theater in our next hour here on the WGN Radio Theater. Please like us on Facebook. We're trying to get to, 4 million likes? We'd like to get to
we're,
4 million
we're
likes.
We're close to 4
yeah.
million. I
4
think we
million
have about
would be good,
3.5
right?
3.5 million.
Yeah.
And we've posted some great pictures throughout the evening on Facebook. So if you have a little curiosity as what to Carl might look like as he's putting food in his mouth, you might check out our Facebook page.
I think you were the one putting all the food in
her
mouth.
Yeah, well, show me Facebook and
edition,
then tell me who is putting the food in
you.
Their mouth.
All right, let's take a break here on the WGN Radio Theater, and Lisa and I, Mike and Shane, and the whole gang will be right back.
We are back with Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
It's all anybody's heard. You're going around, and you're like badgering people with this sad sack, loser, sob story, and I don't understand why.
Let's check in with Paula from Chicago. Hey, Paula.
Hi, Josh.
Hi, Paula. So great to hear your voice.
Oh, and I'm so glad to always hear you both.
Oh,
and, you know,
Paula's one of our loyal listeners. Paula, can you name that celebrity's voice?
Ryan Gosling.
You are absolutely right, Paula. I am so happy to give you a $25 Lumonati's gift certificate, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, and you can check out their menu at lumonati's.com. I hope you have a delicious pizza on us. Paula, we miss you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paula. Great to hear you. All right. Thank you
thank
so much.
You.
Hey, before we get into the Damon Runyon Theater, I want to say hi to my good pal, George White. What's up, George? How are you? Good to see you.
Hey, doing great. Thanks for having me back.
It's great to have you back. And George has a TV show coming up on ION Television this spring or fall?
It's a fall show.
Okay, fall show. Tell us about Master Plan.
Master Plan is a show about a group of entrepreneurs traveling around the world. Think of it as average people doing incredible deals. If you look at the fish tank type shows,
yes,
where you see billionaires buying cupcake companies for $80,000. This is the exact opposite. People you've never heard of buying companies that are $100 million, $500 million. It's very exciting.
Right.
Real people, real stress, real fun. And it's extreme. It's a really great show.
And what's your role within that show?
I am the mastermind behind the master plan.
You are the master planner on Master Plan.
I am indeed.
Well, it's going to start impressive. On ION this year. Don't miss it, Master Plan. And George is he's trying to get us in. We're definitely wanting to do it. A television show for ION TV as well. Lisa and
we want to do extraordinary things,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we want to introduce classic television shows on that show for you, George.
I think it'd be exciting. One of the fun things about Master Plan is it spawns other shows.
Yeah.
Our wonderful relationship with ION Media Networks gives us a lot of opportunity to use that that airtime to build new shows for things that we encounter along the way, just like we're doing right now. We call these a master plan moment. I think it'd be amazing. Your chemistry, the two of you, and a comical review of old school TV.
Yeah.
Very fun. Wouldn't that
be cool?
Watch.
Well, we bribed George with some food from Chicago Raw a little earlier.
Did it work?
I think it worked. He's thinking,
he's still here.
I thought it was great. So, No, Chicago Raw was awesome. The desserts, unbelievable.
Yeah,
tiramisu, good stuff. Highly recommend it.
Well, yeah. we hope to work with you.
Yeah, we want to do a show.
We'd really like to do that.
We can call it the Carl Amari Show if you'd like.
That's perfect.
And, you know, and then,
And then you can just call me Carl, because tonight everybody's named Carl.
We can have a special thanks to Lisa. It'll be like a special thanks to Lisa at the end of the show.
I like it.
Yeah,
I like
good
it.
Lisa.
Leave it to Lisa, maybe.
Leave it to
there's
Lisa.
There's a name
that,
in there.
That'll work.
Well, George White, great to see you as always. Everyone listening, check out Master Plan this year coming up on ION TV, and maybe a television show at Lisa and I.
Can you give us your website real fast?
You can find us on Facebook at Master Plan TV, or if you look at getelitemedia.com, and that'll take you all around the place through the wonderful world of Master Plan.
Awesome. Very cool. Great to see you, George. All right, it's time for our next classic radio show. It's the Damon Runyon Theater. I know you're going to like this. Damon Runyon, Lisa, was a newspaper man and writer, and this series was about his short stories, and he wrote lots and lots of short stories, and this particular one is called Joe Terrence. It stars John Brown as Broadway. This is from July 10th, 1949, part one now of the Damon Runyon Theater.
The Damon Runyon Theater. Once again, the Damon Runyon Theater brings you another story by the master storyteller, Damon Runyon. And this one, Joe Terrace. And to tell it to you, here is Broadway.
Thanks. As they say in books, I am more than somewhat at a loss to figure how to begin telling you about Joe Terrace, who was a linotype operator on one of the Daily Blats. I guess it begins one early morning about 4 in the a.m. in Mindy's. Quite a few of the newspaper guys drop in for a snack, and Joe Terrace does also when he finishes work. Well, on this particular morning, I am sitting with Johnny Brannigan, plainclothes gendarme, and Marty Freighter, who will bet on anything. Marty looks up and says,
I could have made book on it. There he comes.
Joe Terrace.
Right on the dot, 4 a.m. I wonder who winds him up and sets him.
I hear tell he's the best linotyper in town. Never makes a mistake.
Every guy makes a mistake, Marty, sooner or later.
Not Joe.
I hear also that he never leaves out so much as a dot over an I.
No guy is perfect, not even him.
Got any dough, Johnny?
Not for a touch.
No touch. But you're sure every guy slips up sooner or later, huh?
Murderers, crooks, con men, even plain, ordinary guys like Joe Terrace. Why?
I'll lay 5-1 on Joe.
What do you mean, huh?
We'll find out what stuff he sets up on a paper. You and me make a bet for 6 months that he don't slip.
Not even once?
Not even half a once.
Anything counts?
Anything. A word left out, one too many put in, anything.
For how much?
My 50 against your 10.
You get that, Broadway?
Uh-huh. Marty bets that Joe does not make a mistake for 6 months. You say he does.
It's a deal. I still say that sooner or later, every guy makes a mistake. It's what's called human nature. And Joe Terrace is only human.
is the way Marty Fader and Johnny Brannigan make a bet. Personally, I think Johnny stands to lose the sawbuck because I know Joe Terrace and he is like a machine. Now, I purposely leave out telling you about Joe's wife before because it is hard to tell you what she is like, except that she is short and a little more than somewhat on the full side in build. However, it is always 4:30 a.m. when she comes in Mindy's to get Joe. And one morning, the scene is as follows.
I like to come in here, Broadway.
Want another cup of coffee, Joe?
Oh, no. Thanks, Broadway. It's about time for Tubby to show up, and she never likes me to have more than one cup.
Oh, I see.
You've never been married, have you?
I managed to evade the possibility for some time now.
Have you ever thought about it?
Oh, I think about it. But then I dismissed the idea as foolish.
Oh. I've been married for 18 years.
Just to Tubby, huh?
Just to Tubby.
Well, it is nice to see a citizen who is steady.
Hiya, fellas.
Oh, sit down, Johnny.
Thanks. How are you, Joe?
Just fine, Johnny. And you?
Good. When are you going to slip up, Joe?
Huh? Slip? What do you mean?
You don't know about the bet, huh?
What bet?
Oh, Johnny here and Marty Fader make a bet on you, Joe. Marty bets you never make a mistake in your work. Johnny says you will.
I never made one yet in my work.
I got 24 weeks left to see you do it.
Well, that can happen in 24 weeks.
I'm counting on that.
Well, here comes Tubby. I guess I gotta go.
Well, here I am right on the dot. Hello, Broadway, Johnny.
Oh,
all ready to go, Joe?
Yes, dear, I'm ready.
I always like to see Joe come in here after work. It relaxes him. His line of work is so exacting, don't you think?
Well,
a man needs to relax, don't you think so? And I think a man's wife should always help him do that. I think after sitting in that stuffy room at the paper all night, he needs his wife to talk to, don't you?
Well,
Joe and I talk about a lot of things, don't we, Joe?
Yes, we do. Well,
everything go all right tonight, Joe?
Well, except
everything always goes all right for Joe. He's the most careful man in the world. Why, his pipe's always in the same place. And did anything interesting happen tonight, Joe?
Nothing at all.
Oh, you poor dear, you're tired. Come on, I've got the car parked at the garage. We'll walk there and pick it up. Oh, I had the tank filled and the whole thing checked.
Oh, was something wrong?
Joe, don't you know what day tomorrow is?
Another day.
Joe, it's our day off.
Oh, I forgot.
Just like a man. You know, we always take a drive up the Palisades on our day off. We haven't missed in 10 years, have we, Joe?
Except for the time.
Not once in 10 years. We pack a lunch and just relax.
Yeah, I can see that.
Well, let's go, Joe. I know you like to talk to your friends, but you got to get some sleep sometime. Good night, Broadway, Johnny.
Good night.
See you later.
Sure, okay, Joe.
Be good, Joe.
Yeah. Good.
Joe, I think you ought to talk to the man about the paint on the house.
Funny that a quiet guy like Joe should marry a dame who, likes to talk.
Maybe Joe is not quiet 18 years ago. Maybe he just gets that way.
I see what you mean.
Yeah, there's nothing to laugh about. A doll like that can be very wearing on a man over 18 years.
I wasn't thinking about that.
Oh, no? What do you think about, Johnny?
Oh, just that I made the wrong bet.
Well, how do you figure that?
I should have made the bet 18 years ago because, brother, he made his big mistake then.
Well, a couple more weeks go by, and still Joe Terrace never pulls a clinker in his work. It is letter perfect. Then it is one morning about time for Joe to show up in Mindy's. I am sitting with Marty Fader, and we are talking about the bet.
I tell you, Broadway, it is like betting on the only horse in a race. I cannot lose.
You notice what time it is?
Huh? Yeah, almost 4:15 a.m. Why?
And you think nothing is peculiar?
Peculiar? You mean funny?
Peculiar is what I say.
What are you talking about?
Where is Joe Terrace?
Huh? Hey, he is late.
Yeah, he is late.
Now, that's funny.
Very. Because every morning for a long time, Joe Terrace comes in right about 4 bells. In fact, the chef times is cooking by Joe Terrace.
Maybe it's his day off.
Yesterday is.
Oh. Say, you don't think anything's happened to the guy, do you?
All I say is, it is very peculiar that he does not show up.
Yeah. And hey, there's Johnny Brannigan.
Yeah, I see him.
Hey, Johnny, over here.
Hello, Marty. Broadway.
Hi, Johnny.
What's new, Johnny?
Lots.
What do you mean by lots?
You drinking this coffee?
It has got sugar in it.
I like sugar.
You got something on your mind, Johnny?
Uh-huh. Joe didn't come in, did he?
We were just talking about it when we see you.
Joe won't be here. Not this morning.
Something happens?
Something happens.
Something about our bet?
Nope. Yesterday was Joe's day off.
Yeah, I know that. What about it?
Every day off, he and his wife take a drive up to the Palisades for a picnic.
What are you getting at, Johnny?
It didn't turn out to be a picnic yesterday. Hand me the cream.
Right here. This is what I like about Jim, Dom. They talk all around things without ever seeing anything.
Training. Well, Joe and his wife took their outing. Only Joe came back from it.
What happened?
From the way Joe told it, she, Tubby, got a little too close to the edge. She was dead when Joe got down to her.
The poor guy. The poor little guy.
Yeah. It's all broken up.
You see him?
Uh-huh. About a half hour ago.
Gee.
Marty, if you want to call the bet off, it's all right with me. A guy in Joe's spot isn't responsible for any mistakes he makes.
No. I'll stick with the guy.
Okay.
Gee, this makes me feel awful bad. I don't feel like sitting here anymore.
He's going to miss her after 18 years.
I got to go. I don't like it here anymore. See you tomorrow.
Yeah, bye.
So long, Marty.
Jenny.
Hmm?
How does it happen you go to see Joe?
Routine.
What routine?
Just routine. By the way, you doing anything special tomorrow?
Well, I plan on a few hours at the track, at Jamaica.
You never pick the right Gigi's. How about saving yourself some money and take a trip with me tomorrow?
Where to?
The Palisades.
All righty, that is the first portion of the Damon Runyon Theater Great Classic Radio Show called Joe Terrence, starring John Brown. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes. Let's take a break, and then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Roger, did you look up that high school basketball score for Fort Lauderdale?
You didn't give me the exact high school name.
Fort Lauderdale Panthers.
All right.
So check that out for me.
I'll get it.
Because I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight without that score. I need that.
Do you think they make the playoffs this year?
I don't know. I think. I've been following them closely.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is that unique high school basketball team coached by the unique Coach Smith?
Yes, I think it is.
The Panthers?
Yeah, sure. The Panthers.
Sure, yeah.
But just so you guys know, St. Thomas Aquinas, which is in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, took a loss today, 70-53.
See?
Damn. He's quick.
Man, I'll tell you. It's important.
Actually, that wasn't... Was that today? No, that was like 2 days ago.
Oh, it was 2 days ago.
Old news,
sorry,
Mike.
Old news.
Oh, my gosh. Old news. We are some wacky people here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Yeah,
very
wacky.
Speak for
yourself, Carl Amari.
I would say Lisa's the wackiest.
I am not
then
the
wackiest. Then Mike, then Roger.
What?
And then Shane.
Are you
and
kidding?
And then Rachel in there, Shane's girlfriend. And then Carl. That's the order, I think.
I win the prize for wackiest.
Do you agree with that, Roger? This is one wacky young lady. She's a wacky lady.
Well,
yeah, she's
pretty wacky. It depends on your definition of wacky.
Your definition.
You should have seen her eating Chicago Raw earlier here. You should have seen her stuffing. I mean, I never seen more food go in.
He's saying that because
mouth.
I have a photo of him stuffing his face with zucchini pasta.
I saw that photo.
But that's a good one,
but
right?
It was very good.
But it's zucchini pasta. It's not fattening stuff. It's zucchini pasta.
So you may stuff.
But the picture is...
tells a thousand words, right?
I'm not going to say anything.
There you go.
Let them go to the site and see it for themselves.
I can get a lot of food in my mouth. I'll tell you what, man. I like to eat, you know? Why do you think I got this... overweight by not eating?
No, you're not overweight.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to Fort Lauderdale. Is Dillard High School? I can't see.
There you go. That's the one
That's
I need.
The one we were looking for.
Shane's waving at me. I gotta get back to this.
All right, get to the show.
The boss. I don't mess with Shane. He's bigger than
I am. He's getting excited back there.
All right, it's time for the conclusion now to Joe Terrence starring John Brown on the Damon Runyon Theater.
Now that makes me wonder more than someone. It is a little better than 6 to 5 that Johnny Brannigan is not making a trip to the Palisades for the scenery. So I am very curious. And the next day I find myself with Johnny, and the scene is as follows.
Here's the spot right here.
Yeah. It is straight down.
Anybody falling off here is a sure bet to stop breathing.
Yes, maybe you will now tell me why you wish to come here.
Just curious.
I know you are a very curious citizen, Johnny. But this time, it seems to me your curiosity is very strange.
Maybe. How long did Joe say he and Tubby's been coming here?
10 years. Only she said it.
That's right. She said it. In fact, she said a lot of things.
What does that mean?
Nothing, I guess. But in 10 years, you get to know a place pretty well. In fact, you could get to know it so very well that you could walk around blindfolded.
Just what is on your mind, Johnny?
Just a meek little guy. A meek little guy who got along just fine with his wife.
Joe and Tubby? I never hear that they ever fight or even have a crossword.
That's right. In fact, Joe has very few words to say.
Johnny, you are crazy.
Sure.
You are a cop so long that when something happens that is out of the ordinary, you like to start thinking like a detective.
Wrong, Broadway. I'm starting to think like Joe Terrace.
Like Joe? Johnny, I like you, so I do not mind telling you now that I think you are out of line. Joe is a nice little guy.
A swell little guy. A little guy who never makes a mistake. The kind of nice little guy who thinks ahead, patient. Never does a thing in a rush, but takes his time.
So that makes him push his wife off at this place?
Did I say that, Broadway?
For a guy who does not say it, you make a lot of noises in favor of
him. Okay, I'm a cop. I like Joe Terrace, but I'm a cop, Broadway.
There is any doubt about it?
Let's get out of here.
I will be glad to do so.
Yeah, I don't like it here.
You change your mind about Joe?
I never had it made up, one way or the other. I just got to wondering what would happen to a guy who likes it quiet and peaceful. A guy who suddenly can't stand a lot of talk anymore.
You mean that is why he... Hey, now you have got me wondering about it.
Okay, I'll wait. Wait for Joe to make his mistake.
Well, you know he never makes any.
Oh, I'm not thinking about my bed, Broadway. I'm thinking about another kind of mistake. The kind nobody ever realizes he makes.
So, that is that. Johnny is a real smart cop. But nobody ever believes that Joe does anything wrong. In fact, I think Johnny is crazy. But like I say, he is a smart gendarme. How smart he is and what happens, I will tell you in a minute. Day at the Palisades with Johnny, I keep a very careful watch. And I see that Johnny watches Joe Terrace. In fact, Johnny makes it a point to be in Mindy's every morning when Joe comes in for his coffee after work. But Johnny never says anything about Tubby or the accident. He is very careful to talk about everything else. Until one morning when the three of us are sitting at a table. And what happens is like this.
You're looking better again, Joe.
Better? Oh, thanks.
Yeah, come to think of it, you are looking better, Joe.
Pretty good for an old man, I guess.
Old? You can't be more than, say, 45, Joe.
46.
46. You don't look it. Now take me, a cop. I'm only 37, but I look 50.
51?
Thanks, Broadway. I only feel 52. But I guess it's my work. You know, being a cop takes something out of a guy. I think it's because he has to, well, be suspicious.
Suspicious? Of everybody, Johnny?
Sometimes. Not always. Tomorrow's your day off, isn't it, Joe?
Tomorrow? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Gonna stay in town?
Sure, why?
Nothing. I was just thinking, you must miss those picnics you and Tubby used to take.
Johnny, for the love of me.
That's all right, Broadway. I do miss them. I miss them a lot.
That's a pretty spot you used to go to, Joe.
How do you know?
I went there the day after.
Why?
I don't know.
Well, I gotta be going now. See you later, Broadway, Johnny.
Yeah, take it easy, Joe.
Sure, take it easy.
Brannigan, it is not very long ago that I think you are a good guy. In fact, for a gendarme, you are a very good guy. But that is 10 seconds ago. My opinion has changed more than somewhat.
You're fickle, Broadway.
You give that poor guy a very bad needle.
Did I?
Please do not act innocent with me. It is only a month ago that the accident happens with Tubby. A guy like Joe is not over it yet. And you sit here and make him remember it even more.
Maybe I had a reason.
Oh, you are still on that kick, huh?
Yeah. Broadway, what are you doing tomorrow?
Keeping real far away from you.
Let's go to the Palisades.
What? What is the matter with you?
Look, go with me. Just once more.
Why?
Well, I like you. I like to think you like me. I don't want you to change your mind.
It is already too late to hope that.
Look, go with me tomorrow for the last time. And I promise you something.
Like what, for example?
If you don't agree with me even a little after we get back, I'll never say another word about the whole thing. I promise.
not know what Johnny is thinking. All I know is that he has got me very curious indeed. So it is the next day about noon that we end up at the Palisades. Johnny parks his car a good piece away from the spot, and I wonder about this, but not for long. Because just when we get to the edge of the place we come the last time, Johnny grabs my arm and says...
Look, Broadway.
What? Joe. It is Joe Terrace.
Yeah, Joe Terrace.
What is he doing here?
Want to find out?
What are you going to do?
Just talk to him. Come on. Hello there, Joe.
Huh? Johnny. Broadway.
Hope we didn't scare you, Joe.
Scare me? Why should I be scared, Johnny?
Well, we came up on you kind of suddenly.
Yeah. What are you doing here? You on Broadway?
Looking.
What's the idea, Broadway?
It seems I come along for the ride. It is not a pleasant one.
I see.
Standing close to the edge there, aren't you, Joe?
No, not very.
You know, we might have scared you so much that you could have jumped back and down.
I never get that scared, Johnny.
You know your way around, huh?
Yes, I do.
Why are you here, Joe?
It's my day off. Tubby and I used to spend it here. I just came up to... Well, I just felt like it, that's all.
Tubby liked it here, didn't she?
Lots.
For 10 years she came here with you. Then one day she gets too close to the edge.
Johnny,
and...
have a hunt.
That's all right, Broadway. Johnny's right. I can't figure out how she happened to get so close. She never did it before.
Once is enough.
Yeah. Once is enough.
You know, if two people were here alone, and one of them wanted to get rid of the other, be easy.
That is, if one of them wanted that. If one of them hated the other enough.
Oh, sure, always that. Not like you and Tubby. I guess there wasn't a happier couple in New York. Everybody says so.
I'm glad everybody says so. I'd hate to think anyone thought different about me and Tubby.
I guess you would. Well, I guess we'll be going, Broadway. So long, Joe.
So long, Johnny. Broadway.
See you later, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Joe.
Yeah, Johnny?
I'm still waiting for you to make that mistake.
I don't make mistakes.
Everybody does, sooner or later.
You shouldn't have made that bet.
I got time. Lots of it. Come on, Broadway.
Well, I have got to admit that maybe Johnny has got something. There is the way Joe looks at him, the way he talks, the way he seems so sure of himself. And he does not seem real broken up. However, Johnny never lets up. He keeps watching Joe. And whenever the two meet, it is like a couple of boxers. Then it comes up one night in Mindy's, and the scene is as follows.
Where's Johnny, Broadway?
Huh? You say something, buddy?
Yeah, I say, where is Johnny Brannigan?
Oh, I do not know. Why do you ask?
Just because tonight is the last night he has got.
Oh, it is 6 months already, huh?
To the day. A sure thing, Broadway. I could have given 20 to one and never lose a wink of sleep. Joe Terrace just don't make no mistakes.
You know, Marty, it seems as though you are right. Very right.
You'd have thought a guy losing his wife like he does would have slipped one time or another. But nope. He goes right on like a machine. Yeah, like a machine. Yeah,
speaking of your bet, here comes Johnny.
Oh, yeah, watch me give him the needle.
Not too much. I do not think he is liable to take it kindly.
Sore loser, huh?
Yeah, maybe, but not the way you think. Hiya, Johnny.
Broadway, Marty.
Johnny, you owe me a sawbuck.
Not yet, Marty.
It is 6 months.
It'll be 6 months at 4 o'clock tomorrow morning.
We bet on the hour, too?
Yeah, we did. Fair enough, Broadway?
It seems to me that it is. The 6 months will be up at 4 o'clock tomorrow morning.
So that gives me 6 more hours.
Okay. If Joe Terrace does not slip in 6 months, he will not slip in 6 hours. But at 4 o'clock, you hand over his sawbuck.
Sure. And I agree with you, Marty. If Joe Terrace doesn't slip in the next 6 hours, I'll quit trying.
You mean that, Johnny?
That's right, Broadway. I mean it.
I know the way Johnny says that he does mean it. Maybe he has got doubts now, too. But, like I say before, Johnny is a smart cop. Well, what with one thing and another, and because I have got to get up early to go to the track the next day, I retire early. I am in bed by 4 in the morning. And I'm just drifting away when I hear...
Yeah, who is it?
Broadway, this is Johnny.
Johnny? Johnny Brannigan?
Yeah, what are you doing?
I am planning to sleep. What are you doing, staying awake for life?
Can you meet me in half an hour in front of Mindy's?
Huh? Why?
I think Joe Terrace made a mistake.
Okay, Johnny. I will be there in 15 minutes.
I'll be in a cab in front. We'll have a couple of calls to make.
Calls?
Yeah. One to Joe's paper, then to a minister by the name of McClee.
Minister? Johnny, you are talking to me, Broadway. And besides, you are already married.
Just be there, that's all.
Johnny, please tell me what this is all about. First you rush to the paper and you do a lot of talking. Now you're rushing out to a minister.
Yeah, that's right. I just wanted to make sure Joe set up the line of type for this.
What is it?
Tell you later. Yes, this is it. Wait here, cabby. Be right back. Come on, Broadway.
It seems to me that 4:30 in the morning is no time to be paying a call on anybody, much less a minister.
I called him. He knows I'm coming.
I will try to be patient, but the top of my head is bulging.
How do you do, Mr. Brannigan?
Me. It's nice of you to go to this trouble, Reverend McClee.
Not at all. Your phone call was very unusual.
We won't come in. That it in your hand?
Yes. Here you are.
Won't take a minute. This is exactly the way you wrote it?
Word for word.
Nothing left out, nothing added.
It's an exact copy. In fact, you can see that's a carbon.
Can I have this for a while?
Certainly. And I hope for his sake that you're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Well, thanks, Reverend McClee. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Now the top of my head is all the way off, Johnny.
Broadway, let's go see Joe Terrace.
He is a very hard sleeper. You knocked for a minute already.
Take it easy.
What's the matter? Oh.
Hello, Joe.
Johnny.
Why, have we come in?
No, come on.
Joe, this won't take only a few seconds. Joseph Terrace, I hereby arrest you for the murder of your wife.
You do? Why, Johnny?
On your confession.
Confession? Johnny, he does not say a word.
He didn't have to. Did you, Joe?
What do you know, Johnny? How do you know?
Here. You set the type for this sermon by Reverend McClee, didn't you?
Yes, I did. You can check at the paper.
I did. Now here. Here's a copy of the sermon. Reverend McClee gave it to me. Take a look at it, Joe. A good look. Read it carefully. Then read what you set up for the paper.
I see. I guess I made a mistake, didn't I? How do you like that? All my life I've been a typesetter and linotype operator, and this is the first mistake I ever made.
Coming along, Joe.
I guess I am, Johnny. I guess I am. You know, I'm glad. It was kind of a strain on me. Else I never would have made that mistake. Okay, Johnny, I'll dress and go with you.
So Joe dresses and goes with me and Johnny. By this time, I am unable to say a word because I do not know what to talk about. It is later that morning, after Joe is booked, that Johnny and me are sitting in Mindy's, and he tells me the payoff.
I just about gave up Broadway. In fact, I would have, if it hadn't been for that bet with Marty Frater. I looked through the paper. I always read everything. It's the cop in me. Never miss a thing.
You mean you even read sermons?
Yeah. Let me read you something. Here. And in the brotherhood of mankind, there is everlasting hope. Oh, Lord, please forgive me for what I did.
Huh? What are you saying?
That sentence doesn't fit, does it? Then again, we are all one in the sight of the Creator. Let us think that way. And, oh, Lord, please forgive me for what I did.
Joe Terrace. He is thinking about what he does to Tubby.
Yeah. His subconscious mind thought about it.
The poor guy. It drives him crazy.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I...
Well, Johnny. I looked for you at 4, but you are not here.
No, Marty, I was someplace else.
You know you owe me a sawbuck.
Oh, sure. Here you are.
I always bet on a sure thing. See you again sometime, Johnny.
Yeah, sure.
Johnny, you do not lose that bet. You win it.
I told you once before, Broadway. I like Joe Terrace. The mistake he made doesn't count. Not for the bet.
And so ends the famous Damon Runyon story, Joe Terrace. Listen in again next week for the Damon Runyon Theater. The Damon Runyon Theater with John Brown as Broadway is directed by Richard Sandville, and the stories adapted for radio by Russell Hughes. Vern Carstensen is in charge of production. This is a Mayfair production.
The Damon Runyon Theater, July 10th, 1949. Joe Terrence starring John Brown. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.